Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my esteemed co-host, Phil Big Sexy, the Iceman Mendoza. For those of you who don't know him, look him up. If you search world's fittest, greatest looking bow hunter athlete on the internet, I guarantee he will come up in your search.
Well, maybe like, what, the third or fourth page back, Will? Come on, man. What are we talking about here?
First page, first search.
Hey, what's going on? I guess I'm speechless already, but.
Well, let me tell everyone who our guest is today.
I liked the intro music. That was like the voice of God.
It was.
Like angels from that. What was that?
You'd have to ask Phil. He sent it to me.
That was good.
He's like,
it was good. But, I went and saw Creed last night with my boys.
Hold up. People don't even know who you are yet. They're hearing this.
They'll figure it out.
This very well-spoken machismo voice coming out at them with that deep bass tone. Ladies and gentlemen, we are joined by an equally handsome, deadly, and fit Benjamin Greenfield tonight.
Machismo.
Yeah, Creed has an awesome soundtrack. You guys got to see that movie if you haven't seen it yet.
It's good?
Yeah. That was really good.
How many stars are we putting on it?
What are we using, a 5-star system?
Let's use 10-star. That gives you a little more wiggle room.
I'm gonna give it an 8. And what put it over the top was the fight scenes in it. The way they film the fight scenes, the boxing scenes, they somehow figure out a way to get really up close and personal. So it's literally like you are in the fight, like you're getting hit. Or you're hitting. It's pretty cool the way they film it.
Now, what would you consider a 10 on your movie scale?
Ooh, 10. I'd say something that like for me, I like movies that have good eye candy and a good soundtrack and just move the whole time. So that would be like Slumdog Millionaire was a little bit like that. Another one was I'm blanking on the name. It's an older movie with Ewan McGregor and Nicole Kidman, and it takes place in France. And it's almost like a musical. I'm blanking on the name of it now. Moulin Rouge.
Moulin Rouge. That's
yeah.
10.
No. Seriously.
No.
Movies like that are just like stuff flying at you the whole time. And then of course anything in the Rocky series. Love that, just for the old school value. So, yeah, it kind of depends. Different things will make a movie a 10 in my book. But, yeah, I like a lot of the cinematic stuff with the good soundtracks and lots of color and light and action.
See, I'm with you on Slumdog Millionaire. I'm with you on the Rocky movies. But for me, pound for pound, if I'm sitting down and we're watching a musical, there's only one movie I'm watching, and that's Mary Poppins.
Mary Poppins isn't bad.
No, that's my go-to. The scene, you got the chimney sweeps, you got Dick Van Dyke as Bert.
Dick Van Dyke is freaking hilarious.
He is. He's hilarious.
That dude's brilliant.
At one point, they're jumping in to going, you know, into the carousel. All of a sudden, they're riding cartoon animals. I mean, it's a phenomenal movie. Great heart, great story.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Going to that crazy guy's house and floating up to the top of the ceiling.
Exactly.
I love to laugh.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I've got a simpler mind, or I guess my audience that I have to watch TV with when I get to watch it is just of a little lower age scale. So Alvin and the Chipmunks and Teen Titans is about what I've been watching lately. So that's what, yeah.
You might be able to get him into Mary Poppins. I think that scale's too younger. You don't think that scale's
I'm going to sidestep him from the Mary Poppins storyline there. Yeah.
Dude, it's a
good story. Do you guys watch like shows, like TV shows?
You know what? No, my wife likes to watch that one. I can't, it's on TV now. It just finished. It's the chick that's got all the tattoos on her body. She's like an FBI agent or something like that.
Yeah.
I can't remember what it was called.
I know what you're talking about, but I don't know the name of it.
I would catch bits and pieces of that. That's like really the only show other than a couple pre-recorded hunting shows that I get to watch when I'm on the workout, trip, but yeah. That's about it. What do you watch, Ben?
Master Chef. That's about it. I like that, like Master the cooking show. Yeah.
I like Master
Chef. Good ideas.
That's, if I'm going to watch a Master Chef, I'm watching the kids cook. That's impressive. You get these little kids. I don't know if you watch it, Ben.
Yeah, Junior Master Chef.
Junior Master Chef. And I'm not – I don't think I'm up on the new one. I've been watching like an older one. And there's this little like chubby kid who wears these snazzy little outfits. And the way he talks, it's like he's 40 years old.
Dude, the best kids are always the fat ones who are complete nerds. Who, you know, all they do is spend time in the kitchen cooking and eating. But, dude, those kids have that thing wrapped up as soon as they walk in.
Yeah, it's like I can barely use a microwave. You know, these guys are making foie gras.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to win Master Chef, be the 11-year-old who needs a quadruple bypass. And you'll win that $250,000 easy.
So the only TV show you watch is Master Chef?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to turn.
But I don't get TV reception, so I'll watch Hulu.
Hulu, when it comes up, check out Fargo.
Yeah, exactly.
Fargo would be my one recommendation.
I like the movie.
Yeah, the show's pretty good as well. That would be the only thing I can really strongly recommend.
Nice, cool.
So what's going on in the world of Ben Greenfield? I see you're traveling all over the place, speaking to interesting people. You had my boy Wim Hof.
Yeah. I just got back off the coast of Florida. I was out there for 6 days doing a free diving trip. So it's something I've always wanted to learn how to do, go really deep in the ocean. Like I love the water, love to swim. I've done open water swim competitions all over the world. And I feel at home when I'm in the water. And, there's even a book about this. There's a book called Blue Mind. It's about how a lot of people are just hardwired to have like this magnetic draw to being in water or near water or around water. And for some reason, I feel at home when I'm in the water, but I've never really done much diving down lower than about 15 feet. So I signed up for this free diving course, ultimately because I'd really like to go and get into spearfishing a little bit more. But free diving is a good way to learn just how to survive at you know, very, very deep depths and get very comfortable in the water, increase your breath hold time, et cetera. So I spent about a week down there, and our goal was 84 feet. But when we were out on the last day, some funnel clouds blew in, and we had to cut the day short. But we wound up going down to 66 feet, which I was pretty proud of as far as depth in the ocean, even though the serious free divers will go down to like 300 feet. And what was even cooler, what really got me jazzed, was when I went down there, my breath hold time was a maximum of 245. And within 2 days, they got me up to almost 4.5 minutes just using all their little breath holding secrets like ventilation and purging and you know, basically you blow off a bunch of CO2 before you hold your breath, and you do like this deep, almost like meditative breathing where you go 2 seconds in, 2 seconds hold, 10 seconds out, 2 seconds hold, and repeat that over and over again until you do your final breath hold. And then you do like a diaphragmatic breath, chest breath, shoulder breath, and then you suck as much as you can kind of up through your, like your, you kind of shrug your shoulders and open up your trachea by looking up towards the sky. And you putting all that stuff together, it's amazing how much longer you can hold your breath, which means you can, you know, stay underwater that much longer and go that much deeper.
It's amazing the people that are really good at their craft, the little intricacies of what they do and how they can help people get better at what they do. I mean, the, like you said, the little details there.
Yeah. Yeah. And the guy who is teaching us, he's crazy. He's, like 2 years ago, he was just basically a fat scuba diving instructor, and he decided he wanted to learn free diving and just has devoted his life to it for the past 2 years. He can go 175 meters underwater, like back and forth in a pool. So that's seven times back and forth in a pool without coming up for a breath.
It's hard to even relate to that.
I do that.
Yeah, but you know what's crazy is, he said, he's like, yeah, when I get to three, he's like, every single muscle in my body wants to come up. He's like, my diaphragm is contracting. It's painful. My body's going into spasms. And somehow he wills himself to keep going another four laps underwater. So it's not like he's not feeling the same discomfort that everybody else feels, but somehow these guys train their bodies to just be able to withstand that urge to breathe. They realize they're not going to die under there, so they just keep going.
When I was young and in swim class, I used to be able to go down and back twice. That was my claim to fame. But haven't tried it since.
Yeah. I saw this story at some point. I forget where it was, but they're trying to develop like this crystal that you can hold in your mouth that somehow releases oxygen as you're under there, and so you're able to actually breathe oxygen underwater. So it's kind of cool. Doesn't have much to do with the kind of hunting you guys talk about on your show, but I still think it's pretty cool, especially if anybody's interested in getting into spearfishing.
Hey, I think all these sports are interesting, even though we do focus quite a bit on hunting. There's a lot to be learned. Like, will you be able to take that breathing stuff and transition it into, say, a train to hunt event or a Spartan race?
Yeah, well, a couple of things. That first of all, as far as the hunting goes, and the underwater hunting or the spear fishing, when you're not in scuba gear, fish swim up to you because you're just like it's almost like you're just a normal animal underneath the water, not connected to all this scuba gear and tanks and everything. So twice we had these big sharks come up to us and just swim literally about 3 or 4 feet up to us, kind of sit around there, hover for a little while, and swim away. It's the closest I've ever been to an animal that size under the water, like human-sized sharks. So that's one really interesting thing is they'll come up to you, the animals under the water, when you're just kind of like when you look like one of them rather than like a robot. And that was pretty neat to be that close to a shark. But then the other thing is, as far as this ventilation and breath holding, absolutely, because that's one of the principles of freediving is you have to consciously be able to control your fight and flight nervous system, your sympathetic nervous system, because an extra heartbeat that's even like 3 or 4 or 5 beats higher dramatically reduces your breath hold time. And so for that same reason, like they wouldn't even let us drink a cup of coffee in the morning before we'd go out and dive because of this very, very slight increase in the heart rate. So you do everything you can to keep your body in relaxation mode. And obviously there's some crossover there when, your heart is pounding through your chest as you're about to take a shot, and you have to figure out how to consciously lower it with breathing, for example. That's really the way that they do it in freediving, this kind of like box breathing. And, as far as like a Spartan goes, I don't know about that so much. Maybe before the spear throw, but most of the time during that race, you want your sympathetic nervous system kind of in overdrive mode. So, there's a few situations in that though. I raced the world's toughest mutter a couple weeks ago, and that was similar. There was one point in that race where they have this obstacle called Operation, where you have to take a pole with a hook on it. You have to shove it through this hole in a wall and get a ring that's about 10 feet away using this pole. And this is right after you've literally like sprinted up a hill. The penalty is you got to grab this 60-pound sandbag and do about a half-mile penalty. So it's a significant time penalty if you don't get this thing. But the hole that you put the pole through is surrounded with this high voltage, like a coil. So it's just like that game Operation. If the pole kind of goes off to the side, anyway, as you're on your way to get the ring or after you get the ring, you get this huge electrical shock, and they have you stand in water as you're doing it. And it's not like a little jolt. Like, it's a big shock. So if you drop the pole when you get shocked, or if the ring falls off the pole, you got to go do the sandbag penalty. So that's another situation where, you know, you have to, with a really high heart rate, figure out a way to get your heart rate down, focus, get the ring, not get shocked. You know, and you're doing this over and over again over the 24-hour race. So it's just like every time you get to that thing, you're like, please, please don't let me get shocked. And you're just trying to figure out how to lower the heart rate.
How many times did you get shocked?
Oh, like 3 or 4 times. So I only dropped the pole once. So every time I got shocked, I was able to maintain my hold on the pole and get the ring out and not have to do the penalty. But that's the difficult part, is once you start to get shocked, it's like this vicious cycle, because you almost drop the pole, then you get shocked again because it touches the edge. So it's a tough obstacle.
How did the world's toughest mudder go?
It was hard. So the idea behind that race is it's out in the Las Vegas desert, and it starts off very, very warm. So you're in your shorts and, you know, your racing bib and everything, and you take off, and you get about 15 miles in, and the race starts in the afternoon, about 2 p.m. So around like 4:35, the temperature starts to dip a little bit. And on every single loop of the 5-mile course, there's 8 different water crossings where you're swimming, or you're like, you know, you're rolling through mud under barbed wire through water, or you're jumping into a pool, or you're swinging, you know, through a rope, or there's like this one point in the race where you come to the edge of a cliff and there's a 40-foot cliff dive down into the water. Then you got to swim and crawl up these ropes that go up the cliff back up onto the course. So you're basically getting wet the whole time, which was fine during the day when the race first started. But as the evening sets in and the temperature dips, the desert gets cold. So it got down to about 34 degrees that night, which every time you're jumping into the water, you know, you get more and more cold as the race goes on. So just about everybody wears a wetsuit. So I brought my triathlon wetsuit down and just put that on after about 15 miles. But that thing's only, you know, it varies like 1.5 to 4 millimeters. And I should have been wearing like a 6 to 8 millimeter suit. So it got to about 2 a.m. that night, and I started to get hypothermic, like shaking uncontrollably, splitting headache because my teeth were chattering so bad. Like it was really painful. Yeah. So my wife was there. She was my Sherpa, right? So wow. Every time I'd finish a loop, she'd be there, and she'd have like a water bottle with some chia seeds and some honey mixed in. And she was just, you know, kind of like making sure I had my fuel. Slowed down considerably after that. Ended up going 50 miles. And at 50 miles, you know, it literally felt every step like the tendon was going to rupture, like intense pain, like somebody was kicking me in the back of the heel. So at that point, I decided that 50 miles was enough. It wound up being like 53, something like that. And since I've got a lot more racing coming up, and I'm heading down to film a reality TV show here at the end of this week, that's all just like adventure racing and obstacle racing and stuff like that, I decided to call it a day and go change up and get ready for a giant buffet down in Vegas. So went and stuffed my face with about 7 plates of food and collapsed into bed.
Were carbs included in that plate of food?
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. So, interestingly, here's the deal. 2 days later, I headed down to Florida to do that free diving course. So for the free diving, there's some really interesting research being done by this guy at University of Florida named Dominique DiAgostino. And he works with the Navy SEALs and divers to limit the damaging effects of hypoxia and also diving at altitude and some of the things that can do to the brain in terms of like hypoperfusion and low oxygen. And the number one method that he uses in the subjects that he researches is something called ketosis, which is like a not just a very high fat diet, but also the ingestion of oils like MCT oil and also these powdered ketones. So ketones would normally be something that your body would produce when it burns fats. And ketones can be used preferentially instead of glucose by your body. So it's kind of a really, really cool way to hack yourself into an extremely efficient form of fuel that your body can utilize. So I was familiar with his research, and I thought, well, if I'm going to go do a free diving course, I want to do this. I want to do like a high fat diet with limited calorie intake, use these ketones, use MCT oil, and just basically see if that makes breath holding more comfortable, or see if it makes diving underneath the water more comfortable. So I basically had my last hurrah after World's Toughest Mudder, stuffed my face with 7 plates full of everything from chocolate, the chocolate eclairs, I think they're called eclairs, sweet potatoes, burgers, pretty much everything I could get at the buffet. And then the next morning I fasted for about 12 hours and then started into this whole ketosis experiment, because fasting is the best way to kind of jumpstart your way into the benefits of ketosis. So I did have one meal there though where I just basically ate for about 3 hours straight.
So when you do the jumpstart into the ketosis, the fasting kind of shocks your body into not having any food, any carbs, kind of cleanses it all out.
Yeah, exactly. It just vastly accelerates the body's ability to tap into fatty acids as a fuel. It makes sense logically, of course, if you're not dumping exogenous sources of, say, like protein, which can get converted into glucose, or carbs, glucose in general. It just allows yourself to get into using your own fatty acids more efficiently, more quickly. And that's the same reason that I encourage just about everybody who wants to stay very metabolically efficient, or who wants to say, like over the holidays, for example, maintain weight or not gain a bunch of weight. I tell people to do an intermittent fast every day, which means that every single day, you just have a 12 to 16 hour period of time where you go without eating. So that could be from like 7 p.m. in the evening until 9 a.m. the next morning. And it's a really good way to teach your body how to burn its own fats as a fuel. And it also gives your digestive system a little bit of a break. So there's a little bit of kind of like a health benefit as well. So there's been some really interesting research on fasting, not just using that intermittent fasting approach, but also using like 24-hour fasts, week-long fasts, stuff like that. And a lot of the world's, the blue zones, the areas where people live the longest, they all have some kind of a fasting regimen where they'll have a certain time of the year where they fast, or a certain day of the week where they fast, or certain times of the day where they go without eating. And it just makes sense, because the more you stress your body out requiring it to digest food, the more you're requiring of your metabolism, the more junk you're building up, basically. So I'm a big fan of giving the body a break from a caloric standpoint, on a regular basis.
So how often do you fast?
Well, I do that 12 to 16 hour fast every day, and then I'll do a 24 hour about once a month. I haven't really gotten on the whole, there's some people who will start off the new year with a week long water fast, that type of thing to clean out the body. I just, usually I'm snowboarding and, hanging out outside so much the first week of January that if I were to try a week long water fast, I'd freaking you'd find me curled up dead in a snowbank somewhere out in the ski slopes from lack of fuel. So I'm not a fan myself of going much longer than about 24 hours, but the people who are willing to sit in their house and do yoga and do that for a week, more power to you.
So does sleeping count in those 12 hours?
Yeah, that's why I do it at night.
So if I 4 hours before I go to sleep, right? I don't eat. Yeah. I sleep for 8 hours. That's a 12-hour fast.
Yeah, and same thing with a 24-hour fast. The easiest way to do it, and this is the way I'll do it, is a Saturday at lunch until Sunday at lunch. So you just have one day of the month where you give your body 24 hours where it doesn't have to process food. But when you consider that all you're doing is a lot of that time you're sleeping, and really all you're skipping is Saturday night's dinner and then Sunday morning breakfast. You're good to go, and that's that's a pretty easy way to wrap your head around a fast.
I got a story about a fast, right?
Oh.
I had to give blood one time. This was, mind you, I was 20 years old, I think I was 19 or 20. I think I was just home from 2 years of college, and pretty in shape young man, I will say. I don't want to pat myself too much on the back, but I was in pretty good shape. Well, I had to go give blood the next morning at 9 o'clock, and they said you can't eat after whatever time. You have to fast for 12 hours. Well, I stopped. I think I didn't eat at like 7. So it was going to be around 14 hours when I went in. Well, I missed my 9 o'clock appointment. So I didn't go. They had to reschedule me at 11, so I still didn't eat. So I go sit down in the chair, and the nurse puts my arm on the deal. She pokes me with the first little needle, starts sucking the blood out. I look over, boom. I was face down on the floor. I woke up and I got three ladies fanning me, you know, and I can just, you know, I'm hearing what's going on, but I'm not hearing what's going on. And it says, it's always the ones that are so attractive and so in good shape that always pass out. And there's this old lady that's got to be like 60 years old that's drooling over me. And I'm passed out on the floor from giving blood. So that's,
you don't know what they did to you when you were out. How long were you out?
I'm okay with that. At that time, I was into older women, so I was all right with that.
That's a little bit older, brother.
Hey, man, you never know it unless you experience, right? I'm not saying I did. I'm just saying if she took advantage of me, I'm okay with it.
That's scary. I mean, maybe they took more blood than they needed to just to knock you out so they could have their way with you. I mean, maybe they have like some kind of a scam going down there.
Yeah, maybe they didn't even start taking his blood. It was just knockout drug.
Exactly. Yeah, they roofied you as soon as you walked in. That little cup of water they gave you was a roofie.
Yeah, I had a feeling. I had a little fear of going in to donate blood for a couple years after that because but it was just because I hadn't eaten and I wasn't used to that. I was not used to that at all.
Yeah, Phil, I think anyone that gets molested while donating blood would have a part of it.
Yeah, a scar, a little PTSD.
You know?
Is that, find that, your underwear.
That little, that little mark, that the nail marks on the side when they're pulling my pants down, my hips.
Feels like I could have sworn I wore underwear into this place.
Seeing your nail scratches all over your back.
Yeah. Well, that was my
lipstick in places. Don't remember having it.
Trust me, there was one decent looking lady in there, and the rest were older women that, yeah, not a good thing. But anyway.
Yeah. That's the way those healthcare facilities always go. There's always like one good looking one that you want to be the person who takes your blood or your blood pressure or anything else like that. And everybody else is kind of looks like they've lived at the hospital a little too long. Yeah. No offense to all the nurses listening in.
No, I'm sure there's nothing but a lot of hot nurses out there.
Your entire listener demographic is just hot nurses. It's,
yes, there's not a single man listening. That, all hot
that,
male nurses.
That French maids.
Yeah.
I wish.
So, I'm absolutely married man, Phil.
Yeah, I am too, man. I am too. This was back in the day before I was married. So, but anyway. But I've got a question. You did the world's toughest mutter. You obviously do a lot of other adventure type races. You try train to hunt, or you've done three this year? Is that right?
I did three train to hunt.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, what would you say? I mean, give us some similarities, some differences between like the world's toughest mutter, the Spartan races, and then you know train to hunt is its own kind of unique deal. But between the two big adventure races, the Spartan race and the Tough Mudder, the ones that I'm familiar with. What's are there other ones that are more extreme? Or, I mean, I've heard of the Death Race, but I don't know if you ever did that.
Yeah. Gosh, I mean, like, you know, the way that a lot of these races are is, you know, somebody will come up with some crazy idea for some 3-mile adventure or obstacle race, and then that'll morph into a 10-miler, and then somebody will say, okay, well, I want to do the 3-mile one, but I want to do it all day long, and you know, whatever, get 20 miles, then somebody will come up with the Death Race, which is like 2 days long, and then, you know, the Agua de Fuego survival race down in Mexico where you're just like running for 2 or 3 days. And, you know, so you know, and then of course you've got like those eco challenge type of adventures that are like 5 to 7 days long. So there's a big mix out there, but I can tell you from the events that I've done, a few things. First of all, I don't really have much of an interest in doing the super duper duper long events that have no meaning or purpose behind them. What I mean by that is like the Spartan Death Race. that is you out there by yourself, essentially doing yard chores for the race organizers, like chopping wood and carrying rocks up hills until they decide that the race is going to be over. They blow an air horn or whatever, and you're done. And you get like a, you can get a T-shirt or like a skull or something like that. But there's not really not much of an emphasis on team building, skill acquisition, stuff like that. I mean, no offense, if people want to go do stuff like that to, you know, put a notch in their belt or climb their own personal Mount Everest, I think that's great if that's what drives you. But for me personally, if I'm going to do something like that, I want it to be like, you know, like this recent freediving trip I went on where it was a hard, you know, 5 days, much of it spent just churning up and down in the ocean and drifting miles and miles out to sea. But we were learning how to do some cool stuff, right? There was like an educational component. You know, the same thing with like the Navy SEAL, the SEAL Fit Kokoro camp that they do down in San Diego, right? That's 3 days of just pure suffering and hell. And, you know, you're spending, you know, entire nights in the ocean with the surf washing over you, and you know, come up, do burpees on the beach, go back into the surf, and you've got these 26-mile night hikes up the side of the mountain where you're doing like, you know, special operations that the coaches give you. But ultimately, the whole thing is designed to teach you how to work with and cooperate with a team and to lead a team while you're going through some very difficult situations. So there's an actual kind of end goal in mind. Train to hunt, same thing, right? Like the, like some of those tasks that Kenton has us do, they're super duper tough, you know, the sandbag get ups. And you know, in Colorado it was like a 2.5 mile, you know, ruck with 100 pounds, you know, the obstacle course with the shooting. But ultimately there's a deeper meaning, right? Becoming a better hunter, which means being able to prepare for your, you know, prepare your food and, you know, feed your family and everything like that. You know, Spartan racing and Tough Mudder, Those are kind of interesting because Tough Mudder is, for example, not a race. That is a bunch of obstacles that you are fighting either by yourself or with the team. But there's a very, very intense team building aspect to that race, because you'll, there's obstacles like in the World's Toughest Mudder. You know, there was one obstacle called Everest, which was this giant wall they had to get up and over that was impossible to do without the help of other people. You know, there were other walls, other obstacles, you know, like these giant rolling dice that you had to climb over in the water that you just couldn't do unless you had five other people pushing the dice over with you. So races like that, you know, again, there's team building. Races like Spartan, you know, there's money, there's awards, you're racing against the clock, so there's that meaning and that purpose in those. But ultimately, you know, all the events are different. You know, again, Spartan's a race, Tough Mudder is more of like a bunch of obstacles strung together, Train to Hunt has more like the shooting and the obstacles and the rucking combined. You know, some of these death races are just purposeless, doing, you know, chores for as long as the race organizers want you to do chores. So, you know, I don't know if that answers your question, but it's a huge mix of stuff.
So what's your choice, if, you know, I mean, what do you, obviously you try, it seems like you put your hand in a little bit of everything to experience things, yeah, sometimes, but what's your favorite to actually prepare and go out and do? Is it still triathlons?
No, I mean, triathlons are fun, but you know, I guess maybe I burnt out on them, I don't know. But you know, once I got to the point where I'd done, you know, over 100 triathlons and, you know, gotten paychecks and awards and trophies and all that jazz and just lived that lifestyle, you know, I just decided swimming and biking and running for long periods of time was not super duper fulfilling. I didn't want to be like the 50-year-old guy who was, you know, doing 2 Ironmans a year and, you know, living swimming, biking, and running and staring at the black line at the bottom of the pool and, you know, the white line on the side of the highway all the time. I'm finding I'm getting more drawn to the more meaningful events that have some kind of a purpose behind them. So, you know, three examples of that would be, you know, first of all, that, you know, the free diving example that I gave, where it's going to allow me to spend more time in the water and hopefully pick up a new sport, spear fishing, trained to hunt. I freaking love those events, just because it's taught me how to shoot, and how to go out and harvest an animal in a different way than I'd done before, and forced myself to learn new skills that have come in incredibly handy. And then for Spartan racing, a big part of that is that that's a good way for me, for my own business, to just spend time in the trenches studying nutrition, studying fitness techniques, studying what works and what doesn't when it comes to forcing the body to go beyond that point of like glycogen depletion, right? 90 plus minutes where you start to run out of carbs and where you got to figure out how to eat properly, how to drink properly, how to take care of the body. I mean, you know, I won't lie. One of the reasons people kind of follow what I do is a lot of times I'm just going out and trying stuff and then writing about what works or coaching people with what I found to work and what doesn't. And so, you know, those type of races for me are just as much personal fulfillment as they are, you know, survival, because my business kind of thrives upon me knowing what's going on out there in the, you know, in the racing and the fueling sectors. So, I'd say I don't have a favorite right now. My whole philosophy is that you know, once something becomes standard and ho-hum and chronic repetitive motion and automatic, you should think about going out and finding something new to do or acquiring a new skill, because you know that's what keeps you alive. That's what keeps your brain developing. That's the entire concept behind the, you know, once you retire, you start to slowly die type of thought pattern. So I'm a big fan of just constantly challenging the body and challenging the mind. I think that once you've gotten comfortable, that's a danger zone.
I started a thing a couple years back where every year I try a new sport, right? Don't always stick with it, but it's always fun to try something new. So this year I picked up rock climbing. And now it's funny you bring up the own personal Everest thing. It's like my big goal long term is I want to climb Half Dome. It's like, to me, that's...
Is Half Dome the one, is that like the big like carved rock formation?
It's in Yosemite. There's kind of three, I think it's, I want to say, there's El Cap, there is Half Dome, and then...
I see it in my head. I know the one you're talking about.
But it looks like basically, you know, like it's shaped like it sounds. And it's just one of those climbs that, to me, you know, there's bigger. I think El Cap's the biggest. I'd have to look it up. I don't keep track. But it's just one of those things. It's just, you feel like it's calling you, you know? Like, someday, going up.
Yep, exactly. And a big, big part of a lot of these things is the journey of getting there as much as standing there at the top of whatever it is that you've achieved, right? Like, all the equipment and the gear and learning the new skills and practicing, like that's the fun part of a lot of this stuff.
Yeah, there's a famous climbing quote saying that mountain climbers are the conquistadors of the useless, because when you get to the top, there's nothing there, you know? And like you say, I mean, you get to the top, there's nothing there, but it's...
I know. You'd think there'd be like, I don't know, like, you know, seven virgins and a goat and a giant steak dinner or something like that. That sounded kind of perverted. I meant the goat, meaning, you know, barbecue or whatever. Anyway, so you'd think that there would be something at the top that we'd actually be going for. But, you know, it's just that it's that feeling that you get up there.
Yeah, I mean, at the top, the only thing you really get is that feeling of accomplishment to cap off. The top represents all the work you put into it, really. And you're there for such a brief moment compared to the amount of time it took for you to actually get to that top.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's a very intense dopamine rush that you get to when you achieve something like that. You know, it's one of those things that we're chemically hardwired to pursue. The same reason that we like to eat good food, and the same reason that, you know, we like everything from like sex to reading a good book to hearing good music to watching our favorite movie. I mean, a big, big part of it is all neurotransmitter and dopamine and hormone based. I mean, we've got these built-in mechanisms that somehow allow us to derive a great deal of pleasure from things that seem like they might be purposeless or useless, but they're not.
So you mentioned before the you're going off to film the Adventure Race series. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so that's that I don't know a lot about it because they've been keeping it kind of dark, kind of under wraps. But the basic idea behind it is that the same folks who produced the American Ninja Warrior TV show are now branching out and starting a new reality TV show called Spartan. And it is a reality TV show that is comprised of like obstacle racing and adventure racing with a team of five people. And so they're taking us away. We film for 7 to 8 days. We're pitted against a bunch of other teams, and that is about the most I know about it. I can tell you that Matt and Sharon Anderson, the national train to hunt champions in the mixed team division, they're two of the people on my team. My wife is another person on my team. And then Jonathan Burns, who runs the local CrossFit facility, he's another guy on the team. So I think we'll have a decent team, but I really have no clue if we're going to show up and they'll be like having us, whatever, herd cattle or jump over walls or swim across rivers or ride bikes. Like I have no clue what to expect.
That's where all that team building exercise comes in handy.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So I have no clue what they're going to throw at us. I do know, though, that a lot of these reality TV shows, they can freaking make you look like an asshole, or they can make you look like a wuss, or they can make you look like, like anything they want to make you look like, because and even on the contract that I signed, you know, it says that NBC reserves the right to I forget the exact wording, but it basically involved like public embarrassment and defamation was basically what it came down to, because they'll do things like film you in one situation with a certain reaction on your face and then take that and splice it into a completely different situation, right? So basically they'll make it look like you're a completely different person than you actually are. So I'm kind of mentally prepared to try and not be excessively dramatic in just about anything, so they can't burn me too bad. But yeah, I'm a little bit nervous.
I feel like that's what stone face.
What's that?
You gotta have the stone face. Yeah, like man. Cold filler lit case the whole time.
You want to be stone face, but you also don't want to be that person who's just completely boring on TV, right? So it's gonna be interesting.
They'll cut you.
What's that?
They'll just cut you.
Yeah,
that's the thing. I mean, yeah. I did an interview for – they asked if someone would train to hunt would apply for the show. So I was like, sure, send in a little application. They did a Skype interview with me, and they recorded it, and they would just keep trying to get me to say things, mm-hmm. kind of make me sound like I was an ass. And I was just like, I can't. Like, I could have gone for it. I could have just been like – totally rednecked out and just been, you know, completely not myself. But it was like, you know what, to do this little piddly show that's going to go on, and even if it became huge, it's like I'm there for one season and I'm gone. You don't see, you know, people who, you know, do really well on Survivor go on to have huge careers. So I was like, right. For me, it's not worth selling my soul to go on to this show.
Yeah. You know? Well, I can tell you every member of our team gets $50,000 if we win. So
that's worth it.
I know.
They weren't offering me $50,000.
It'd be worth looking like an asshole a couple of times for that.
Yeah, they were saying, oh, it's worth the trip, and I was like, no, it's not. Like the show was taking place in Africa, and I'm like, listen, I'll get to Africa someday. If I really want to go to Africa, I will get there. Like I don't need to go and have you make me look like an idiot. But for $50,000, looking like an idiot doesn't sound bad.
I know. I can always buy myself a good lawyer with that $50,000 to clear my name.
Yeah. How'd your hunting season go?
It hasn't gone too well so far, honestly. I was actually out there this morning trying to film my late season archery tag, but it's so cold. There's pretty much nothing stirring right now. So later on this week, midweek, I'm also going to hit 49 degrees north, a mountain up here with one of my friends to also fill my elk tag. But right now I haven't filled either my deer or my elk. I spent a week up in Colorado earlier this season, and really, really beautiful area up there in the Santa de Cristo mountain range. Pretty much everything we saw, though, it was early season. The elk really weren't making much noise at all, and about the closest we ever got to anything was about 1,000 yards or so. So a whole not frustrating week, because it was fun. You know, we were able to see a lot of good country and do a lot of hunting, but came back empty-handed from that one. So far the hunting season hasn't been fantastic, but
allegedly Will Bradley and I'm drawing a blank. Will, huh?
Chuck, AJ,
Chuck Cooley.
Yeah,
Chuck Cooley's supposed to come down to Colorado next year, and we're gonna go do some over-the-counter elk hunting. So we're gonna go. I'm gonna go ahead and throw the invite out to you too, if you want to join. We're gonna be tromping the mountain for about a week or so next year in September.
I already told my wife I'm going to go back to Colorado and hunt, because I loved that country down there when I was down there. And my aunt's in Denver. I told my wife this time I'll drop her and the kids off to play at my aunt's. And but I'd definitely be up for coming down. That was a spendy tag I purchased when I came down there this last time to not fill it. The out of state, I think, was, gosh, it was like, I want to say it was like $500, something like that. Could have been more than that.
Yeah.
I remember, but yeah, it was not cheap, but I guess that's the way it goes.
It's an expensive piece of paper.
Yeah, it is an expensive piece of paper. Yeah.
I think AJ from Dangerous Cow, he is going to come out as well, and there's a chance there could be some filming on that, huh?
Yeah, I'd be up for that. I'd totally come down. That's a direct flight from Spokane down to – would you guys be going around like – Denver area, or
there's a couple spots that I've kind of got in mind that are over the counter, of course. Probably
he can't give you the spot, Benji.
No, it'd probably be 2.5-3 hours outside of Denver.
Yeah, last place I went, we drove up to Canyon City, and then out to Salinas, and then from Salinas it was about another hour drive, and then about 2 hours on horseback, and then another couple hours of hiking to get out to where I was last time.
And you were up in that wilderness area then, south. Where I was sheep hunting this year.
Okay. Yeah, and it got pretty high. It was at about, I think we peaked out at about 13K for elevation. So it was nosebleed country. It's fun though.
That's in that area, and I'm probably not the same area, but in that general area is one of the spots that we might consider. But we'll keep that on the download. We don't want all of Will's groupies coming, following us.
Right.
We're up and down the mountain and having to fight them off with a stick.
The way we've been putting out invites, we're already going to have about 20 to 30 people in camp.
Like, hey, that's okay.
Will have to turn off his tracking beacon.
Instagram. I'll turn off the location.
Remove the GPS bracelet the New York prison gave you.
Yeah.
I'm gonna turn a whole bunch of guests into pack mules.
There you go.
Yeah, they're gonna say, "How do you?" Go ahead.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just gonna say that you guys are gonna be asking, "Well, how do you hunt elk?" And I said, "Well, you go that way. I'm gonna go this way." and as soon as I get something down, then I'll say, "Come back over here and let's all pack it off the mountain. Then we'll talk about it."
Like any good guide, you're gonna make sure you're taken care of first.
No, I wouldn't do that, Will. But I definitely will have a good time. There's no question there. So what were you going to say, Ben?
I was going to ask. Both of you guys are wearing the same hats.
You like that?
Will's is flat and Phil's is curved.
That's right.
What's the hat? What's this logo?
People are going to be excited to hear this because they've been asking for it, and Phil is the model for the prototype of the new non-flat bill version of the Iron Wolf Athletics hat, which will be available shortly to the main populace. It's the group you're part of. You should know what this symbol is.
I haven't been paying too much attention to the actual symbol, but it's cool. Yeah, I like it.
Isn't that nice?
Where's mine? I got to get one.
I'll hook you up, Ben Greenfield.
Sweet. What the question is,
are
Ben,
you flat brim hat?
Are you a flat brim or are you a curved brim guy?
Kind of depends.
It depends
on the social situation.
Look at that.
So the flat brims, I like those, wearing those backwards. I like the way those go backwards. Flat brim hat, that's a good look for, I don't know. What would you do with the flat brim hat? Probably the CrossFit knee-high compression socks, some kind of bright shorts, and then a shirt with a witty phrase on it.
That would be
like a flat brim.
Every day.
Yeah. And then the curved brim is more like the jeans, the T-shirt, curved brim, you know, slightly more conservative, but you could rock both.
If you want to look good, like a manly stud.
Hey, choose your words carefully, Will Bradley. Choose your words carefully.
Good, like a manly bearded stud like myself, you go flat brim.
Now, as you can tell, I'm a little bit more of just like a pomade type of guy myself. Yeah. I preferred more of the bedhead look. I like to open up my hair, allow the air to oxygenate the roots.
The truth
is, that's kind of my method. So you'll have to just get me like an Iron Wolf forehead tattoo for me to wear.
We'll have to get just bandanas for you because your hair is too good to cover up. So I don't even know what
you've
been asking about.
That's right, baby. That's right.
I was a hair model. That clean, sexy country look he's got going on.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, like the clean, sexy country look. That's the curved bill. And then the flat bill is more of like the badass CrossFitter who wears stupid T-shirts.
That's where I'm at. That's
There you go.
Me too. That's what my wife thinks is sexy because I see her checking out all the cowboys. So I just try to look as close as I can to what she likes, and maybe I'll get lucky.
She must not have searched the internet for you yet, then.
Hey, Will, you did when you were here, man. You did not pump me enough with her because I don't know,
Dude, I was so captivated by the size of your shop. I didn't think anyone would need to be talked up. I don't know who wouldn't just walk in and all of a sudden just be like, damn, Phil.
This is one. It's because I'm compensating, Will, with the big shop.
Oh, is it?
I'm going to have to see this shop. I'll have to come down sometime and check it out.
Oh, yes. Speaking of coming down, Ben, there's you like to win money and compete, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Have you heard of the Alpha Bowhunter Challenge yet?
No.
Did I say that correctly?
The Alpha Bowhunting Challenge, yeah. That's
the Alpha Bowhunting Challenge.
That's Phil's new competition for next year. We're going to put on a one-time event that's going to be I'm going to call it it's just a bow hunting tournament, man. I mean, it's we'll have a day pack on you got to wear for the whole shoot. You're going to have something similar to Train to Hunt with your shooting portion of it. And then we're going to have on what's going to be the actual alpha course is going to be a kind of like your pistol rifle competition stuff where you'll have two shooters shooting head-to-head. You'll start at the starting point. You'll move away, maybe involve some belly crawl, maybe jumping over and under some logs. You're going to be shooting at breakable targets, clay pigeon style targets, five target course, and then come finish at the starting line for time. And similar kind of to what Kenton's got with Train to Hunt with awarding time and penalizing for shots. It'll just be a more condensed kind of spectator-friendly type event with that alpha course.
Why clay pigeons?
Because it again for the spectator friendly or spectator aspect of it, it gives that wow factor of yes you broke. It's a pass or fail, you either break or you don't, right? And it'll all be mark yardage. So we as bow hunters, and myself included, I practice judging yardage, but when I'm in a hunting situation, I'm pretty dependent on a rangefinder. So not that I don't I really think people should practice judging yardage, but this is just one of those things that, again, trying to be a true to we can as to trying to train bow hunters, make them aware. There's also going to be a broadhead portion, an accuracy portion in the competition where you got to shoot your broadheads for a few targets.
Nice.
So yeah, it'll be at our new location in Denver here at the, we'll have our outdoor range set up here come spring, so that'll be kind of a good kickoff for a different style tournament.
I like it.
Yep.
The Alpha Bow Hunting Challenge. Sounds very alpha. Very like what's it called? The alpha male? Is it like a men's only? Or are you going to have a women's?
No. We have I'm just going to keep it very simple. It's going to be a youth division, a men's division, a women's division, and then we're going to have the alpha division, which is kind of your elite division. So anybody who wants to kick up the double entry fee for the alpha division, I'm kicking $1,000 into the prize pool for that division. So it's going to be somewhere a $60 to $70 entry fee for that division, and then winner could win anywhere. They'll win at least $500 because of the 1,000 I'm putting in will get broken down, but you know, somebody might walk away with $1,000, $1,200, $1,500, and
nice.
So nice. It'll be sounds fun. It's something different. Yeah. So I've kind of released the info on the Championship Bow Hunting Podcast. I'm just getting ready to do a little promo video on it. So, but we'll let you know. Cool. I'll send you an invite if you're around.
Very cool. Yeah. For sure. I'd do it.
Yeah, you should make up special little invite cards to send out to some of these.
Mm-hmm.
I like invites.
Kind of like the Kumite with a little scroll with the
pop-up cards. Yeah, or the scroll, exactly. Or even just like the, what's it called, the singing telegram where someone can just come to your house and invite you.
I like that. I like the Kumite, though. You don't hear a lot of references to Jean-Claude Van Damme movies anymore.
Hear ye.
I watched this deal on the MMA guy, man, the guy out of Canada. What the heck is his name?
George St. Pierre.
Yeah. And how he was like, that was his gig. He wanted to be, you know, that was what motivated him, was that whole Bloodsport kind of movie series and all that stuff, you know. So it's just fresh. I just saw that recently on YouTube. So there you go.
That's hilarious. Now, are you still sticking with the having this thing on Memorial Day?
I am, man. It's on Memorial Day weekend.
As terrible as that is for timing.
Will.
I've lost Will. Your guys' audio.
Uh-oh. We still got you, Ben.
Not sure what happened.
Ben obviously can't hear us telling him that we still have him, Kenny.
Yeah, I still have Ben. I still hear you guys.
Is this what happened to me? Or?
Check.
We got you. You got
you
us?
Guys hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, I can't hear you.
I hope he doesn't say anything terrible right now while this is recording.
You want to try to pick him back up real quick, Will? And
okay. Here we go. Now I can hear you.
You got you?
Yep.
Okay.
See, that's how good Ben is with computers. You know he's good with computers because I had to restart my stuff to get it to work again. I did what every person who has no clue about computers does.
The on-off.
I just unplugged it and plug it back in until something works.
Yeah, no, fine. Will... You're just upset with the date of the tournament because you're going to be having your little one around that time.
That's right. That's
hey, man, you know, that's more
the first one I feel like I could come win.
Yeah, babies are overrated.
Like, I feel like I could win this. It's not that long.
Your baby will be there for, like, 18 years, dude. You'll be fine.
I know. I should have Melanie listen to this.
Yeah.
You guys can convince her.
Yeah.
This would be great.
No, Melanie.
Kids are always still there when you get back.
I'm not saying a word, Melanie. I'm backing out on this one.
men used to go off to war and off to slay dragons for years at a time, and then come home for their child's 14th birthday to celebrate it with them before, you know, going back out to discover a new country via a seafaring ship. So
and then they just take the kid with them.
Right. Exactly.
You raise them up to this point. Now I'll take them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you ever get in hot water for the amount of time you have to travel or be gone, or is it kind of like it's
no I mean, honestly, because when I'm home I work out of a home office, so my wife is pretty much sick of me by the time I actually leave to go do something. I try to bring my kids and my wife with me to some of these things, and then when I'm at home I just go out of my way to spend time every single day, like quality time with my kids or with my wife. So yeah, it's definitely different because, you know, that means there's like a week of super duper high quality time and then 6 days of just like not being there at all. And then 2 weeks back to high quality time and then maybe 10 days gone. But yeah, between high quality time when I'm at home and then really making sure to get in the Skype calls, the text messaging, you know, the phone calls, stuff like that, at least once a day when I'm traveling, it works out. But honestly, my wife and I have been that way ever since we've been married. I've been traveling and you know, going around doing everything from triathlons to speaking and stuff. So she doesn't know any different either. So I kind of get lucky in that way too. I think she just thinks it's normal. So don't tell her otherwise.
I've been trying the phrase, if you don't want to be with a broke man, or if you don't want to be with a broke man, get used to being with a busy man. And she throws back, well, you better start making money on this podcast then.
Or the other response you'll get is it's not about the money. I just want to be together.
Yeah. I don't know how you combat that.
I'm happy as long as you're here and we're eating Campbell's soup and white rice.
Yeah, she says that until she starts asking me to take the trash out and clean up this, clean up this. And it's like, wait, if you're so happy to have me here, why do you keep sending me off to do things?
Yeah. Well, guys, before I get in too much trouble by saying things I hope my wife will never hear on a podcast, I am going to have to rumble relatively soon. And anything else you guys want to
– I got a question.
Oh, you got a question.
Yeah, I guess I actually – my endurance –
rapid fire?
Yeah, my endurance coach from CrossFit is a big fan of the Ben Greenfield. So he wants to know your plans for Spartan next year. Like, are you – you gonna try to like win one, do championships, or where are you going with that?
I'm switching to all short course stuff next year for two reasons. First, I just feel like I want a break from doing things that take a really, really, really long time. And second, Spartan is introducing more championships at the short course level anyways. So most of my medals, my podiums, my success in Spartan has actually come at the shorter, like 3 to 5 mile stuff. So gonna do short distance. Cool. Short, explosive distance. Put on muscle, get swole, become a sprinter.
Now, you're a hunter, right, Ben?
Mm-hmm.
You're part of a fabulous online Facebook page group called Iron Wolf Athletics that you're now aware of. That you're part of.
I recognize the logo.
Yeah, now that you recognize the logo. You would recommend anybody and everybody joins this Facebook group, wouldn't you? If they want great tips and to be part of a community involving hunter athletes.
I'm in it for the naked pictures, but what you said works too.
Dude, did you see the picture of the dude with Arnold Schwarzenegger yesterday?
No, I didn't. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah, you'll have to check that out.
I've got a question for Ben, and this is a real question. Sorry. Then we can get back to the naked pics. Real quick. Ben, my household just experienced a week and a half ago all of my family getting sick with like a stomach bug, right? So vomiting, diarrhea, the whole nine yards. It just kind of passed from person to person. So when you're basically blowing chunks and you have nothing in your system, what would you say is, you know, supplementation or food-wise, what would be most important to get back into the system other than liquids? Is there something else you would, you know, is it the probiotics type stuff? Is it what would you
– Yeah. So from a food standpoint, my two go-tos or three go-tos when there's sickness in the house and it's like stomach related, number one is bone broth because it really helps to heal the stomach and it's also nourishing. It's got minerals. That's very easy to digest. Number two is the chia seed slurries. Chia seeds coat the lining of the stomach and they make it feel settled when you've got sickness going around. And they're also, again, very easy to digest. That's where you take chia seeds, you soak them in water and make like a gel in the fridge, and you can mix that with whatever salt, lemon juice, you know, anything you want to put in there. And then ginger tea, just like really, really rich ginger tea that you make by cutting up a bunch of ginger chunks and boiling them. And then as far as supplements go, yes to probiotics, yes to higher dose vitamin D. And then there's a few different things that also work really well that you can usually find in like little liquid dropper bottles at like the health food store. Echinacea, elderberry, and oregano. Those three are all really, really good for both immune system as well as knocking out bad bugs. So that's what I would do from a supplementation standpoint.
One last question on the bone broth. Have you ever made that out of game meat?
Well, you'd use bones, not meat, and we've used
game bones.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, Yep. You can use game bones. We've used hoofs. We've used chicken feet. Typically, we'll more often than not just use a whole chicken, just because that's easiest to use, and you can pick a lot of stuff on. But anything that's got bone marrow in it, or joints, capsules, cartilage, anything like that will work. So the bigger the bones, the longer you got to boil. So for a bigger animal, bigger bones, you might have to go as long as 48 hours in a crock pot.
Cool. Appreciate it, man. I had that question.
Dang, that's a good question, Phil.
It's a good question.
We were struggling last week, man, but we're all better now. But anyway.
Yeah, with the nice segue from nude pictures to talking about diarrhea.
Well, we can just go back to the Iron Wolf Athletics page for the non-PG stuff.
Yeah, so everyone, if you want to be part of that community, head on over and join it. I know Ben has recommended some supplements to me before, as far as when I was doing that strongman, had to come down and wait, get back up.
Yeah.
So this is a plug for Ben.
And the Viagra for your your impotence.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, I wasn't sure if we were supposed to talk about that or not.
Strong like bull.
Yeah.
Strong like bull.
Sorry. So here's like a no BS testament that Ben, anybody who's wondering, you know, is it just witchcraft, voodoo he's pushing? No, because thanks to Ben, I made my like 7-pound weight cut in a week to weigh in what I needed to for the strongman competition. And, you know, my first 2-3 events, they didn't go that great. But once my body started absorbing the carbs and stuff Ben recommended, it was, you know, good enough to land in fifth place. So
yeah, you use some like rapidly absorbing Vitargo starch after you made weight.
Yep,
which is a good way to go. Anything that gets absorbed super quickly, that's a waxy maize starch, and you know that any of these engineered carbohydrates that are engineered to absorb very very quickly, they work in a situation like that quite well.
And so Ben knows what he's talking about. He really does. He guided me through that, and it was the weirdest thing because the last day I didn't eat or drink anything, and I was never hungry or thirsty. It was the weirdest thing I've ever had happen in my life. It was just – so I was like,
hey,
you know what? And Ben, I trust.
Magical.
I'm a regular listener on the Ben Greenfield podcast, so I dig it, man. I dig it.
Sweet.
We didn't even get to talk. We'll have to do this again sometime sooner than from the last time we did it. We
got to do a live one.
We should do a live one. We didn't even get to talk about Wim Hof and your interview with him I wanted to talk about. But some things we do have to talk about is Alaskan Guide Creations, sponsor of this show. Great company, great product. Ben, do you have an Alaskan Guide Creations vinyl holster, vinyl pack?
No, I don't, and I'm having an issue still with the fact that I old school wear my binoculars around my neck and they bounce, and after a long day they even like start to wear on your traps. So yes, I see the value. I just don't, I haven't sprung yet for a bino harness.
You should. And when you, it's only like $100 somewhere in that.
We're going to work it out with Ben, because No Limits Archery is soon going to be a dealer for Alaskan Guide Creations, and we're going to work one out with Ben.
You're going to hook up?
I'll take care of Ben, yeah.
I want one that goes around my head to where the binoculars just stay on. We could do that. That'd be sweet. But like a monocle, so I've got one eye that I can shoot from and see normally out of, and the other one's a binocular. So just talk to him about that.
That'll be a good look.
Yeah.
Also,
the monocular.
We've had this great breakthrough of an idea, guys. Listen to this. Also, check out Mountain Ops. You can head over to their website, getmountainops.com, and buy some delicious supplements. I've made a pumpkin spice video not too long ago. You can check out on the Natural Born Hunter YouTube page using the Vanilla Magnum. Real great stuff, high in protein, low carb protein. Then you know, you got the Yeti pre-workout, the Enduro, the Phoenix. What else are you using, Phil?
Blaze. Nothing. Nothing.
I'm just gonna start throwing out mythical creature names. The Saskatchewan, the Chewbacca.
That's good. The hopefully by the time this podcast comes out,
you took the Phoenix already. The Chimera.
You're stepping all over my ad, guys. You're killing me here. This is why other people probably don't do live ads. Check out, where was I? Hopefully by then the blue drink will come out, which after this episode, maybe Phil won't be getting anymore. But for all of you out there buying your supplements and need of new supplements, you can use the code NBH20 at checkout and get 20% off your purchase at mountops.com. Also, head on over to iTunes. If you haven't listened to Ben's podcast, you should, frankly, because it's
highly
entertaining.
Get the app.
Get the app.
There is an app, yeah.
It's very informative. He's got great guests like Wim Hof, who maybe you've seen Vice did a little story on as well.
The real Iceman.
The Iceman.
That guy's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah. He's got just super intelligent guests on, bringing you a lot of just breaking ground knowledge. Super interesting, really entertaining. Check that out.
That or we just talk about marijuana.
Yeah, which is also good. Yeah. Real performance enhancing drug. You can head on over to iTunes, check out this podcast, give us a review, subscribe to the podcast, subscribe to Ben's podcast. That really helps podcasts in the iTunes rankings. And while Ben is already pretty much on top of the whole fitness scene, we want to be on top of the hunting scene. So if you could help us, we need your help doing that. So subscribe to YouTube, Instagram, Facebook, iTunes. Leave us a review. We would really appreciate it. Anything else, gentlemen?
I think you got all the subscriptions taken care of. The naked pictures on Iron Wolf. The Yeti Chimera Smurf drink. So I think we're good.
Yeah. I want some. All right. On, Ben. Thanks for coming on, all right. Man.
Hey. Cool. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this has been the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Wake up, chase dreams, repeat.